Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 31st, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
And I'm Genra Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a pretty busy week this week. Some decent amount of news, but we'll also kind of go into the release schedule for the next few months. Kind of tailors off June here, but May and April have quite a bit of stuff here to check out. But yeah, we got some other news as well. Some new stuff for your subscription services. A big showcase happening next week. Couple of games getting, or one game getting delayed. And some various bits of business news. Such, including some layoffs, some acquisition stuff, and one weird story. But yeah, before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. The main new thing I've been playing is Open Roads. This is on Game Pass, but also I think on PlayStation and PC as well. So you can check it out on any of those platforms. It is a game from a lot of the team that used to work at Fulbright. So they're now in their own team called the Open Roads team, due to a toxic managerial style that Steve Gaynor had at Fulbright. That led to a lot of mediation with them and the publisher Annapurna Interactive, and kind of came to a head where they kind of, you know, went their separate ways as the team that was working on Open Roads kind of just kept going on that and formed their own team that worked to finish this game. And yeah, that's kind of where we're at development wise. But yeah, Open Roads has a lot of the hallmarks of the previous games that Fulbright made. It features a woman or a girl named Tess who is packing up to move from her grandmother's house, as her and her mom, Opal, are set to have to leave because they find out that their mom signed up for 3 mortgages to pay for debts and such, and then as a result, upon her death, her passing, that they found out, like, oh, you do not own this house, and the bank owns it, essentially, so they're going to be moving out pretty quickly. But along the way, they start finding some interesting and weird stuff that suggests there's a mystery afoot with what happened with their grandma, not necessarily her death, but in the past that, you know, something that happened after their father, at the grandfather or Opal's mom or dad passed away back in the 60s, and centers around this, at least where I'm at right now, this summer house that they used to have that the mom and her family had not visited since, I think, maybe a year or two after the father passed. Just kind of did not want to go back anymore after that. But yeah, along the way, you're kind of looking around, picking up stuff, and the sort of main interaction that it does for interesting objects is it has a big prompt that says, "Hey, Mom," where you basically ask your mom, like, "What's up with this thing that I found? You know, tell me more about what happened with this," kind of thing, as a means of adding more story to it as your character sort of just learns more about, you know, her mom's history and her grandmother's history, grandfather, you know, aunts, that's all the main part of the family, and sort of dealing with this summer house, that kind of stuff. So yeah, you get a lot of dialogue choices, nothing that seems to be too consequential so far. Maybe there's some things that change at a certain point, but a lot of the dialogue between you and your mom are more just informational. You do get a few times to make some choices that seem like they are more consequential, but I don't know if that's going to play out. But in the big thing that kind of stands out for this is that while the environments are all sort of 3D, you know, 3D objects, all that kind of stuff, fairly high res environments and such, your two characters, your two main characters, are 2D animated figures. And not like high, you know, high res animation. It's a lot of, you're seeing these same animations play out as they're talking. It's not trying to, you know, be lip synced with the dialogue, that kind of stuff. You're not doing that. So it kind of creates this weird look to it. That's, I don't know if it's more of a development thing of like, oh, this is just a cheaper way to go about it or what, but it does create an interesting kind of unique look to it that I was not expecting going into it. But yeah, you have a pretty good cast here, voice cast here, with Caitlin Dever as Tess and Carrie Russell as the mom, Opal.
Mm-hmm.
So you get some very good voice acting there with that. So that kind of helps buoy it a good bit. So yeah, liking it so far. I'm a few hours in, basically dealing with the summer house as it has some locked doors. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how do I get into these other doors of this summer house? You can tell it's like a summer house from like the 60s because it has a lot of like tin siding on it that's rusted and kind of worn out,
mm-hmm.
As well as a lot of, you know, other stuff around it. It's like from the 60s and 50s and that kind of stuff. So yeah, pretty good game. Definitely worth checking out on Game Pass if you like your narrative adventure games. So
mm-hmm.
there you go for that. Mm. I've been playing some more Rise of the Ronin, as I am playing some more of the campaign here, kind of exploring the world, kind of looking for some more of the side stuff and all that. But yeah, nothing really to say much more. I've got an ally now, which plays up in an interesting way that I was not expecting, as there are sort of bespoke missions where the allies show up. That's pretty interesting. So yeah, but I did not jump into that mission because I don't know, it kind of made it seem like I could have more people. I think you can have like two allies potentially join you, then sort of swap between during fights, that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I ended up kind of bouncing out of that and kind mm-hmm. of just do more exploration mm-hmm. of the world, kind of going back and dealing with some things, but still kind of missing this big glider thing that's in a bunch of the trailers. So hoping to get that, and then that can kind of open up some more things for me to do. So, but that's Rise of the Ronin. Still liking it a lot. Still get more loot and all that. And then, yeah, play more MLB The Show 24. My closing picture lady that I made is done with the first season. Kind of bounced around in the Cleveland Guardians organization, then got traded to Pittsburgh, their minor league teams, and bounced around a bit there. Now I'm in spring training for next season, where I'm hoping to make the main roster. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but that's the thing that at least I'm trying to do. So playing some stuff there, but also made a new character, a starting pitcher, lady that is basically Peggy Hill. So that's a fun bit there I'm doing. Can't quite get her look right because they don't have the same type of glasses and that kind of stuff, but I used the episode from I think it's the second season where Hank gets mono and you get a bit with her in her high school softball team, so can I use that to kind of get as good as I can for that. But yeah, that's working out pretty well, though. Being a starting pitcher, those sessions in the games are a little bit longer, so I'll plug away at that. But working on the Easter event they've got going on, working my way through that. So that's about all I've got there. And the last one's been a Game Pass game I've been playing for the sort of daily achievement stuff they have for Microsoft Rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out of it. It's Bluey, the game based on the kids show. Mm-hmm. Which is not a very good game. It's pretty bad for the most part. It has like four episodes of things to do in it to take you to new locations. There's like a playground. There's a beach, which none of the episodes goes to. You just do that later. Mm-hmm. There's like a forest you kind of go to, And I forget what the last one, I think the others just take you through different parts of the house.
Mm-hmm.
But the house is incredibly huge in a way that's like, this family is incredibly rich. That's why they can just fuck around for days in the show, I guess. Their kitchen, at least the one you get to interact with, is upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like an apartment kitchen. And it's real kind of small. Mm-hmm. With that, and they've got tons of rooms for each of the kids to hang out in, a bunch of playrooms and living rooms and entertainment rooms and all this, and a huge backyard. It's a ridiculous house. It probably ends up being like the Simpsons house, where they just make up a bunch of rooms that for different things to happen in. But they don't quite piece together well in a way that makes it look like they're a normal family. So they absolutely have to be incredibly rich for this house that has like 15 to 20 rooms in it. Especially one that looks like it has like another, I don't know, this like a garden in the middle of the house, something like that. There's this other place that opens up they don't let you in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the achievements for this game's not too hard for the most part. You know, you're going around collecting stickers whenever you can. There's the same four stickers in each of the locations that you have to go to. So that's not, it's three of each of the four. So you run around doing it, but being a kid's game, it makes it incredibly slow to do anything. Because once you pick it up, it has to show you that it's adding it to the counter in the sticker book. And then this, and you have to wait for the B button prompt to show up so you can back out. And you get XP for collecting these stickers. So every time you level up, you watch the family dance as they show this new hat that you've unlocked. And by the time I get to the end, I was out of hats by a good bit in. So they just show you, like, you got stars. This is star level 5, star level 6. And they just dance and do nothing, and you just have to wait for them to finish every time. It's incredibly slow and tedious with all this. It's a poor kids game, because kids like good games with action in it. Maybe the really little kids will be okay with this, but I think it's a pretty boring game for the most part. There's nothing of notes. Like the central story thing that's happening here is that the dad has found one of his part of this like treasure map, and the kids are fascinated by that, and the dad's brothers each have another part. So that's what two of the episodes are about. It's just going and asking them what's up, and then I think the dad shows up and shows you the way to the treasure via the map, though he doesn't need it. So it's a weird whole thing. But the kids end up getting disappointed by what the treasure is, because it's, you know, like a time capsule thing from the parents, the three brothers from ages ago. So,
yeah,
it's nothing all that consequential. But if you want to get easy achievements, that's a game you can do that in. Like, there's one that was at all challenging. There's one that requires you to ride these slides back to back to back. And it's just a matter of figuring out which one's the right one. So I looked that up. But everything else, like, you unlock mini games, little like party mini games that you just have to win a couple of times each. You know, collect all the stickers and complete the chapters and all that kind of stuff. The one that was challenging is that a mechanic that they never explained to you is that you can pick up these watering cans to fill up and plant, you water flowers until they grow. And you can do that in every location, which you have to, because there's stickers for each of the flowers. But it's like, oh, there's this weird mechanic that they never explained to you. I had to look it up. And it's like, oh, so I found the watering can, but, you know, hadn't figured out that there was more to it. The net just seemed like one of dozens of items they just have in the house and all these locations to pick up and throw around and do whatever. But yeah, that's a Bluey, and that's pretty much all I have to talk about. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, one of the main things I played this week,
and basically beat it one night because it's not terribly long, but it was definitely engaging. The demo for Stellar Blade. So this game ended up being exactly the opposite of what I thought it was going to be. Anybody who's seen any of the images or anything of this game going around, you probably, your first thought was, this is just a clone of Nier Automata. And I mean, there's definitely things that are reminiscent of Nier Automata. The fact that you've got a little droid hovering around you, the fact that you've got like a, you know, the whole story of like, you know, there was an alien invasion, so humans had to, you know, go off to a colony, and now they have to send people to go back to fight all the monsters that have taken over the planet. The fact that it's like post-apocalyptic and a lot of it takes place in like a bombed out city. And you know, stuff like that. But gameplay wise, it could not be more different from what Nier Automata was. Nier Automata is very much a stellar action game where you are heavily based around trying to overwhelm and devastate all of your enemies. Stellar Blade is not that. Stellar Blade's gameplay is much closer to something like Sekiro, where there's a lot of parrying and there's a lot of trying to find, getting the, you know, trying to knock your enemies off balance so that they'll be weaker so you can attack them and have, you know, stronger amounts of damage. And this is especially true when it comes up to the bosses. The bosses are, I wouldn't so much put them up with like a Dark Souls tier because that would sort of make it seem harder than it actually is. But it's still difficult because, again, parrying is a major part of this game's combat. If you try to go in here and just, you know, like typical action games like this and try to button mash, you will die very quickly. There are, you know, somewhat smaller enemies where, you know, you can kind of more or less run up to them and hit them a few times and kill them fairly quickly, no problem. But, you know, that's only if there's like one or two of them around. If they end up surrounding you, they will take you out very quickly. But, you know, like there's also some other sort of Souls-like things. Like the game sort of has its sort of equivalent of bonfires where they're like these outposts and camps that you can go to that you can use to, you know, recharge all of your energy and get all of your first aid stuff back. That, again, sort of acts like, you know, the way that it does in Souls games. There's also, these are also the areas where you can, you know, work with your skill tree and stuff like that. You can also use it for fast travel as well. But unlike, you know, Souls games, like you don't have to worry about, you know, like a stamina bar or losing a bunch of your health if you end up having to respawn, stuff like that. So that's not part of it. And the game does have like a story mode that apparently makes it even easier, but I'm not going to do that. So, and as far as like all like the fan service stuff goes, because this is like one of those things, like it ended up becoming huge for, well, one of the reasons that it was made by the guys of Goddess of Victory, Nikkei, which is one of the most popular gacha games on mobile. And this is like their first full-fledged console title. The other is that, much like with Goddess of Victory Nikkei, it has a lot of fan service involved, and pretty much everything you'll see online seems to draw immediately into the fan service. And make no mistake, it is there, but it's not as egregious as people, as some of those, you know, frankly, chud-brained idiots try to make it out to be. For one thing, that skin suit that you see all the time on the online that they're like just ogling over, yeah, that's more or less the equivalent of what you can do with 2B in Nier Automata, where you can like have her like blast her skirt off, because basically all it does in that game is it's basically like her self-destruct sequence. In this one, it basically leaves you completely unshielded and you can get one-shotted by even the weakest of enemies. So it's actually kind of stupid to play that way, unless you're wanting to do it for like a challenge purpose, which, you know, that's fine. And I mean, there's probably a trophy for that or something, but it's also kind of dumb. And also, like, she has other outfits and they're a lot more like normal than, you know, the one she ends up with in the game starting out. But Yeah, it definitely impressed me. It was a lot more involved than I thought it was going to be, and I don't think I'm going to necessarily buy it right out of the gate, because, you know, this is still, you know, Shift Up's first console title, and there's always possible they're going to throw some bullshit microtransaction stuff at the last minute. But, you know, I'll wait until the reviews come out first, but I'm definitely impressed, so I'll say that. But other than that, I have also been playing Dragon's Dogma 2. And I played the original Dragon's Dogma back in the day. And I remember liking it. I didn't get very far in it, though, because it's a notoriously difficult game. You know, but I started playing it again. You know, I started playing this newer game a couple days ago. When it released, and I can tell you, I can give like a couple of hints. Like, if you're starting off this game, the very first thing you're gonna want to go do is fill out all of your party with other pawns as fast as you can. Because if you try to only do this with just, you know, you and the one pawn that you get at the start of the game, you're going to have a bad time. This game has a tendency to try and bulldoze you at the most inopportune times with very strong enemies. And like, obviously you've got the regular enemies, like, you know, you got your goblins and, you know, your harpies and stuff like that. And goblins, like, they're on the weaker side as far as enemies are concerned, but they can still take a huge chunk out of you if you're not careful. It's really like one of the first major bosses you go up against is a Cyclops. And the thing about the big enemies in Dragon's Dogma is that you can, you know, jump on and climb on them. And, you know, some of them you have to like knock them off balance before you can really do any real damage to them. But yeah, one of the things about this game that people should probably know is if you've seen all the reviews that are online and you've seen them, and it's like, yeah, they're all like sevens and eights and nines. You know, it's getting really good reviews, and not for no reason. The game is really good. But what they did not know is once the game actually released, like for real, Capcom basically slapped a bunch of microtransaction bullshit into it the day it was released. And it's not like really, like most of it isn't really egregious stuff. I'm determined to play this game without any of them. And I'm making fairly good progress, I think. But if that's something that it gets under your skin, I don't blame you for not playing this right now, or at least waiting until it's on discount. Because, yeah, that's kind of a scummy thing for Capcom to do. But and other than that, I'm also still playing Wanted Dead, which is the platonic ideal of what Devil's Third was supposed to be. In fact, it's made by a lot of the same people from that studio. But yeah, I've also been playing that, and that's about it. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, so I left for Tahoe late in the week, but luckily before then I was able to finally Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And so over the course of my playtime, the one thing that I've always said was I'd never leave a region unless I finished all of the side quests and things to do in that region. I'm not going to platinum it just because like it requires you to do every high score in the game, and that's like, you know, not really worth my time, not to mention that you have to beat it again on hard mode, and yeah, I don't ever plan on doing that. But, you know, I said that when I rolled credits, I wanted to say that I'd be able to do everything that I thought was possible. That is until I came to the final side quest. Basically, there's this guy who quit Shinra and, you know, decided to spend most of his days in the Gold Saucer, where he pretty much got the high score in every game, and then he challenges Cloud to beat him in just about everything. And all right, I was going to go ahead and do that. And then there's like one mini game where it's actually a battle arena where you have to like fight a series of fights. I don't know if there's any bosses in there, but it's just a series of fights. And then when I got to the final part of that fight, I went against a guy who just kills you in one hit. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that was my breaking point, and I decided to beat the game from there. And, let me tell you, like, you know, we already know that the remake of Final Fantasy VII as a whole is going to be three games long. And yeah, it definitely picked an interesting place to end. And, you know, I can't say much there, just, you know, for spoiler buddies. But yeah, as a whole, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is a really, really good game. Great game even. But what keeps it from being like one of the best games of the year, in my opinion, is just how the pacing works. Final Fantasy VII Remake was all in Midgar, so like we can't really say much about the open world atmosphere. But with Rebirth, considering almost the entire world is at your disposal, it's really cool seeing how they put it all together. Except where if you're the kind of person who wants to do side quests and wants to be able to complete a region, it just really felt abusive. Especially once you got to the point that I mentioned. And yeah, I know that this is stuff that you don't have to do, but, you know, considering like the mythos and like the legacy that Final Fantasy VII leaves behind, you want to be able to appreciate it all. And it's funny because, you know, a few months before this, we had the re-release of Crisis Core, which is a game that didn't change at all from its PSP counterpart, aside from the fact that, you know, it's a better looking game. But yeah, they did it for a reason. They did it to like reintroduce Zack Fair. They did it to reemphasize the fact that Cloud himself is not that great of a character. And Remake sort of like traded away from that, whereas Rebirth totally goes in on that the whole time. It brings back a whole lot of callbacks from Crisis Core, except some of the more meaningful ones. And yeah, like that's all I'm going to say there. But yeah, it's definitely a title that I enjoyed. My final hour count there was over 101 hours. Most of that was spent, as I mentioned, doing side quests and playing mini games. But I did struggle through the final boss, which had like maybe three or four phases. It was definitely more than three. And you know, I considered bringing it down to easy, but I persevered and I made it work. And it was definitely fun to do. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how the story ends. And the main thing that I really appreciate with this game, especially when considered or when compared to a game like Remake, is the fact that, you know, basically every character that you've met in the previous or you've met in the original game is refleshed out in a way that makes them like even more awesome. Like if you thought Barrett was pretty barren, no, he's pretty cool. Remake showed that, like the story between him and his adopted daughter Marlene is pretty awesome. You know, you learn more about Aerith, even though you definitely knew some from Crisis Core from there. And then I really liked Yuffie as a character. Yuffie was sort of a secret character in the original game, but she sort of becomes forced after Intergrid, which had the DLC for Yuffie's origin story, and that was pretty cool to see. It was fun having her bubbly attitude with the party, and you know, it definitely added some much needed comic relief to a game that pretty much sort of takes itself too seriously, but also brings in a lot of the silliness. Like, you know, the original game was definitely known for its side quests, so it's definitely not something I dock the game off of. But yeah, like a lot of them are great. The Chocobo Racing definitely feels like a real good Mario Kart clone. The card game Queen's Blood is probably the best card game I've played in any RPG, whether it be Final Fantasy or Trails. So, you know, that's some high praise. And yeah, really cool. Definitely worth the 70 if you want to do that. I wouldn't say it's worth buying a PS5 for, but yeah, definitely a fun one if you're a fan of Final Fantasy VII or just want to be able to relive in that world. And then moving on, Pepper Grinder came out on Thursday. This is a indie game published by Devolver Digital. The developer of the game escapes me, but they've only done like one game prior, and I think they're one person. I'm not too sure. I gotta do my research there, but like, yeah, this is a 90s action game through and through, except a little bit more clever. So if anybody remembers the game Drill Dozer, which was a Game Freak game for the Game Boy Advance way back when, that game pretty much was a puzzler platformer that used your drill as both the weapon and a way to traverse. So it's the exact same thing with Pepper Grinder, except in that sort of Devolver brand of action. Like, you know, comparing it to a game like Katana Zero would probably be my closest comparison, just because like the game like oozes with style, and the art style is amazing. The story is pretty stupid. It's basically about a pirate who crash lands on an island and has all of her treasure taken. And then all of a sudden, so her name is Pepper, and then she finds a drill named Grinder, and that drill gives her all sorts of powers. You know, the drill is both a weapon and her main means of traversal. So basically, through every level, you'll be digging through and finding the right path through it until you get to the end and raise the flagpole. And it's really interesting seeing how they make you dig through to collect all these items, and at the same time, have a whole bunch of set piece moments to really make everything matter and definitely feel like it's unique. Like the first world consists of about four levels, and it's really just there to teach you how to drill properly and how to find the right path through the dirt to find your way to the end and use it as a weapon. And then like things really move up from there. Like you eventually find handles there where you have to use another button to swing over to them, all while being able to drill somewhere else, or else you'll be swinging to your death. You'll be able to find like big robots that pretty much act as kaijus, so you can just destroy the world around you. You can find these snowmobiles to get through areas quickly and make jumps you otherwise wouldn't be able to do, just as using the regular Pepper. And yeah, the bosses that you fight at the end of every world are also both really challenging. And when you find the attack patterns, it really makes you proud of when you actually finish them off. I did run into a bug with the final boss where the first phase had him pretty much frozen, so I just killed him easily from there. But then, you know, as a way to fight back, the second phase was a little hard for me because all of a sudden the game glitched out where the music turned off, so I didn't really get much of the audio cues. And yeah, I think I spent around 1 hour just trying to kill that boss alone, and it was worth it because, like, you know, that was me finally finishing the game. And yeah, so I'll be reviewing this game. Devolver gave it to me, and it's funny because they also included a classic style instruction manual. And one thing that I didn't realize is that you can use the shops to expand your health meter. And I never did that. So I played through the entire game with just like four hearts, and it was tough, but I did it. So, you know, the game definitely could have been easier if I spent more time looking around. But yeah, I definitely had fun. Each level has that Mario kind of feel to it, where you can find these big pirate coins and use those coins to get something else and unlock other levels. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of fun in this package, but the game is short. There's only about four worlds in the game, and each of these worlds has about four or five levels, plus the boss, plus some secret levels in between. But for the most part, I spent around just a little more than 3 hours on the game. And even though it's as short as it was, I definitely felt like it was worth my time. The game is $15 on both Steam and Switch if you want to check it out, and I definitely recommend it. It's going to get a 4 out of 5 from me when I write the review. So yeah, that's Pepper Grinder. And then lastly, I have continued my foray through Princess Peach Showtime. When I last talked about it, I had only beaten the first two levels, which pretty much is a demo. And yeah, so this time I've played as Patisserie Peach, or Patissiere Peach. Basically, she's the baker. And instead of just being the side-scrolling action game that it always was, from there it pretty much was just like a mini game on how to build the perfect cake. And that's actually, it was actually pretty hard because you wanted to be able to copy what you see. And it's hard to do with everything moving. It sort of had that Overcooked feel where you want to be able to do everything as fast as possible. And the faster you do them, the more stars you get. And they have like around 10 stars per level. And there's only like one level where I actually have them all in. So while this game is definitely on the easy side and like intended for kids, like as far as mastering each thing, that's the definite hard thing to do with this game. But sort of taking me out of it, I mentioned it last time, is the fact that the load screens take just way too long. And like it's really indicative of like the difference in quality as for development between, you know, the team that did this and the team that did Super Mario Wonder. Because Super Mario Wonder like hardly had any load times and everything was pretty quick. Granted, Princess Peach Showtime is a little bit more visually intensive, but at the same time, like a game as small as this shouldn't have that issue. I also do want to highlight Bandit Peach or Dynamic Thief Peach or whatever she is. And basically it turns her into one of the Persona 5 Phantom Thieves. She has a hookshot that she can use to traverse the world. She doesn't actually attack anybody with it. She really just uses the hookshot to grab things and throw other items and other enemies. And it's really cool just seeing how all of the puzzles come together along with the theme of the world that's generated. Because, like, you know, this game is obviously supposed to be a theatrical show. And it's really cool seeing how they're combining just the different visuals for props and things like that. So, yeah, Princess Peach Showtime is definitely a whole lot of fun. I don't know how far I'm in there yet. I'm in, like, the second set of worlds. But, yeah, I'm definitely enjoying what I'm playing so far. And that's about it.
All right. Yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
On being that we are at the end of March, we have an idea of what is going to be on the PlayStation Plus Essential lineup for April. For their monthly games. First up, the big game, Immortals of Avium for the PS5, which was an EA original game, published by a smaller-ish team, I guess. Making this big, like, first-person shooter that's focused on, like, magic spells instead of, you know, guns and bullets, though your spells are kind of a replacement for that kind of thing, to a degree. Yeah. I've heard pretty good things about that, so definitely we'll check that out, see how that looks. If you want to get into it early, you can play the trial that's on PSN. They have a normal demo that you can play first, like, chapter or two, whatever, so you can kind of see if you want to keep playing it ahead of time for that. Let's see, next up here, Minecraft Legends for the PS4 and PS5. This is their, like, RTS action strategy kind of game that came out last year. Was all right. Wasn't the kind of game that I really enjoyed, so I played a couple hours and was like, this is all right, but was not something that really stuck with me for that, but might be worth checking out for some people. And then, yeah, the third game for the PS4 is Skull the Hero Slayer, indie game that is like a big 2D action platformer. I had my eye on this one. I just never got around to it, but this looks like a pretty good time to jump into that one. So that's one to check out on the indie front. And yeah, then they also mentioned that there is also going to be, let's see, the Overwatch 2 Mega Bundle with some special cosmetics in it that you can check out for, yeah, next month.
Yep.
Some skins for... let's see, Sigma, Symmetra, Sojourn, yeah, Junker Queen, Ramattra, Kiriko. I think these are all characters. These might be the skins have different names for them. Maybe that's the case. Okay. So, yeah, you can check that out here as well on Tuesday, April 2nd. So there you go for that. And then, yeah, the other subscription news we have is that Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack got a new game for the GBA app, F-Zero Maximum Velocity, which is the first of the F-Zero games they put on the GBA. I forget what the second one's called, but this one is one that takes place a good bit in the future, I believe. So you don't see too many of the people from the first game, first couple of games there. For the N64 Super Nintendo, but supposed to be a solid game for that if you want that. So there you go for that. And yeah, that's that should already be up by now. So yeah, there you go. Some neat stuff. Let's see. Oh yeah, there's a big showcase happening next week called the Triple I Initiative. Basically a bunch of indie devs have collaborated to do their own big showcase. They say it will be 45 minutes. Let's see, with world premieres, exclusive gameplay, demos, and drops from some of the top independent creators and games. That'll be on April 10th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And he'll be on YouTube, Twitch, and a few other places as well. So you can check that out. They have the list of all the devs involved in this. Includes a bunch of big names. There's Evil Empire, the people that made all the DLC for Dead Cells. Mega Crit, who made Slay the Spire. Red Hook Studios from Darkest Dungeon Games. Heart Machine is working on Hyper Light Drifter's sequel. And Punkle, the Vampire Survivors team. as well as a bunch of others here. There's ReLogic, who's working on Terraria. Let's see. What else do I know here? There's like Gearbox Publishing and Gearbox Software, which that's a little weird. Focus Entertainment. Extremely OK Games, who is working on Earthblade, the Celeste team. Awaseb, who made the Chia game. So yeah, there's some cool studios here, so looking forward to that. And yeah, that'll be fun. And yeah, speaking of Earthblade, Extremely OK Games, the developers of that, of Celeste, who are working on Earthblade. Seems like a fairly big scope game for them. Have announced that they are delaying it for next year, or that's being delayed from potentially coming out this year. They mentioned that, let's see, from their head, Maddie Torson, saying, I know, this update is long overdue. We appreciate your patience as we try our best to make this video game that appears to be stubbornly determined to not get made. More on the process in the following paragraphs, but first we need to face the music. This game ain't coming out in 2024. We'd hope to be announcing a firm release date around now, but it just isn't in the cards. We know this will be disappointing for a lot of you, and we're sorry for that. Maybe this was predictable, but still, it always sucks when the haters are right. I think it goes on where Maddie says, I've struggled to keep my workload and provide a strong direction for the team while navigating all the challenges of my personal life, including my gender transition. Transition involves a lot of change, uncertainty, and doubt, and it's easy to see how that has bled into Earthblade. They're saying they've been dealing with transition-related surgery and recovering from that, so that good to hear, and especially that they're taking their time, so that'll be good. But yeah, the team has also hired a new person on the team, Kyle Pulver, somebody that's a friend of the studio that I think is like helping them get over the bumps that they've been running into, that's been sort of causing delays and such. So hopefully that works out for them. Maybe they'll be out next year and be the one of the big indie hits of next year. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah,
so there you go for that. Looking forward to that game.
Yeah, looks good.
Yeah. They are supposed to be part of that III initiative, so maybe we'll get to see a little bit more of it tomorrow or next week. So that'd be cool to see.
Yeah.
Next up here, Sony announced a new feature that's going to be coming to the PS5 at some point this year called Community Game Help, sort of an extension of the Game Help stuff they've had for PlayStation Plus people. They're sort of developer-provided guides and tips and tricks and such that you have to have PlayStation Plus to access, but this seems like more of a community-level feature that will not require PlayStation Plus. So yeah, as they say here, Community Game Help will add to the current Game Help experience by expanding the library of helpful game hints, incorporating videos that are automatically generated from gameplay footage of players who have opted in to contribute. When the enhanced Game Help experience featuring content from the community launches, Game Help will be available to all PS5 players with or without a PS Plus subscription. Supported games, PS5 players will be able to contribute their gameplay, view hints from fellow gamers, or access Game Help hints created by developers. I think to make that all a little bit more easy and more plentiful, because right now it's kind of maybe like a few dozen games that are out there, so but yeah, they show off like how you'll be able to access that stuff in the future when that happens, how you can contribute, all that. So yeah, if you want to learn a little more about how that'll work, that'll be cool to see when that happens.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how it's created and used. Obviously this is something that already exists on the PlayStation 5's interface, but I think I've only used it for probably Spider-Man Miles Morales when it first came out. And like, it was pretty obvious from the get-go that the only people who would be using it pretty robustly are the ones who actually worked at PlayStation, because I don't remember ever using it for a third-party game. So yeah, definitely having the community help out with that should definitely help things there. I know for me, I've used it to just try to figure out how to like get trophies I didn't otherwise know how to get and couldn't find FAQs online for. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this will even affect like things like FAQ writing.
Yeah. more ways of kind of keeping you from just going and Googling sort of where you're stuck at and hoping to find something that helps you out on that. It was a good idea. So yeah, there's that. That'll be happening later this year. Some unfortunate news. The Playdate team announced that they have had about $400,000 worth of Playdates going missing. It's about 2 pallets worth from their Las Vegas warehouse. Warehouse has been lost. Yeah. But missing at a shipping factory in Las Vegas, as first reported. Let's see. They were checking in on the Playdates inventory numbers at a shipping center in Las Vegas when Cable Sasser, co-founder of the company, noticed that the inventory numbers weren't adding up right. Upon further investigation, he resolved that about 2 pallets worth of Playdate systems had gone missing, saying that at his GDC talk, it's a bit of a true crime drama. When he brought his concerns to the shipping center, they told him that FedEx claimed they were delivered, but we have no trace of them. To throw another wrench in things, a few weeks later, another set of pallets, which did wind up being recovered, wound up being delivered to the construction site of a Circle K next door to the shipping center. And then, he then showed the crowd a picture of the pallets just sitting out in the open before the shipping center presumably sent someone over to retrieve them. Let's see. He also noted that he was told that the same person who seemed to sign off on the missing pallets also signed off on the ones that were found at the construction site. So there's a lot of research going on now to figure out like what the hell's going on here. Despite the setbacks, he told the story in good spirits. Because, this is kind of some wild stuff. It seems like probably more of an issue on the shipper's fault. Because continually delivering these to the wrong place when there's, a warehouse seemingly next door to this construction site seems like a thing that the driver probably should have figured out from whatever the probably going off of GPS that maybe told them they were there when they were, within spitting distance of the right place. Seems like a whole issue that should have should not have happened, but seems like somebody managed to social engineer their way into these pallets, and they've apparently found some of them from the production numbers associated with these getting registered to other people in Las Vegas. So they seem like they're somewhere around nearby that somebody seems to be selling them. Probably on the cheap to make money off of us of these free handhelds that are kind of not the thing you would expect to be scalped because they're very much handhelds for indie people like indie games. So weird, fun little story.
I wouldn't really call that fun. That really sucks. But the first time I saw one was at GDC, but like unfortunately I didn't have a chance to play it. But like a lot of the people who have one really, really love it. So yeah, it sucks to see, especially like, if you're the folks that made them and, if you want to turn a profit, you gotta be able to sell these things. If they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I have one. It's pretty cool. Ironically, I was playing a couple of games yesterday and what popped up on the screen, the logo for Sweet Baby Inc.
Yep.
It's like, oh, surprised this handheld isn't getting targeted by these assholes, but.
Well, don't jinx it.
They don't know yet.
They will. Thanks to you.
No, they don't care about the handheld because they don't have it. So yeah, let's see. Let's get to some more big business news for lots more money involved in this. Gearbox Entertainment has been sold from Embracer to Take-Two for $460 million. So there you go. That's about a third of what they paid for it. They acquired them for $1.3 billion back in 2021. So great business moves, Embracer Group. It looks like They have, let's see, acquired Gearbox Software, Gearbox Montreal, Gearbox Studio Quebec, as well as the franchises Borderlands and Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, sort of owning that in whole now because they had the publishing rights to those. But now they have the studio and the IP. They also get the Homeworld, Risk of Rain, Brothers in Arms, and Duke Nukem. And I believe there's other stuff as well in this. Let's see. They do not get everything that was part of the Gearbox publishing label. Embracer retains Gearbox Publishing San Francisco that they will be renaming, which has publishing rights to the Remnant franchise, Hyperlight Breaker, and other upcoming unannounced titles. They're also keeping Cryptic Studios, makers of Neverwinter Online and Star Trek Online, Lost Boys Interactive, and Captured Dimensions. These companies will be, quote-unquote, welcomed and integrated into other parts of Embracer Group in the coming period. So they'll be fully embraced here soon. So yeah, Embracer gets rid of another valuable part of their company and brings some more cash into their banks so they can survive for a while longer. At this rate, because that's about $1 billion worth of deals they've made in the past couple of months here. Good for Gearbox to get out of that crappy situation into one that's a bit more stable at Take-Two and their Rockstar money.
Yeah, it's also a bit of a catch-22 story. You know, obviously Gearbox was sort of its own entity under Embracer, and now that this transaction happened, they pretty much saved everyone on Gearbox development, but almost everyone else like got fired or got laid off. There hasn't been a confirmed number yet, but I know a lot of people on the publishing side were laid off. So like that's really unfortunate there. But yeah, that's the catch-22. The main thing here is that we want to be able to get as much talent as possible from Embracer and save them, but you know it's impossible to save them all. And that's the other. It's really strange because I always thought Borderlands was a 2K game before I realized that they were Gearbox, but I guess that was just a partnership. So you know, Borderlands pretty much stays where it's supposed to have been all this time.
It was always kind of a they're an indie developer making a game for 2K, and then never like put the ring on their fingers. That's where Embracer kind of came in, but wasn't that great of a deal outside of their publishing stuff, because you know, Take-Two still gets the bulk of the money from the Borderlands games they made under Embracer, which isn't much. I think it was just Tiny Tina's Wonderlands was under Embracer, so
yeah,
and maybe a couple of ports, but yeah, Embracer loses again. And speaking of losers, Sega is a loser. They have sold off Relic Entertainment to its owners. So they'll become an independently run studio. And in that process, they've reduced headcount by about 240 people at several of its European studios as well to go along with this deal. Let's see. Most of the layoffs are across Creative Assembly and Sega Europe, while a small number will be cut from Hardlight, which I looked that up. That's a mobile developer of some of their other games, but yeah, Creative Assembly and Sega Europe do a bunch of work there as well. So yeah, good for Relic to kind of get out from the Sega ownership, so that they can kind of become an independently run studio again, and make some new stuff. It seems like they'll keep working on supporting Company of Heroes 3 for Sega, and then yeah, probably working on some new stuff. So good for them, but yeah, sucks for the 240 people in the European branches of Sega that have lost their jobs as well as part of this whole sweep of moves. So there you go. I think we're looking at like Ubisoft is the last of the big publishers that has not had any major shakeups. Maybe Take-Two as well. So yeah. And yeah, speaking of layoffs, Nintendo got in on the fun, at least Nintendo of America. They've restructured their testing center in Washington. We don't have hard numbers on any of this because that's Nintendo for you. It seems like they have laid off a bunch of the testing contractors they had, as well as giving a number of them full-time status, essentially promoting them to that. Because it seems like they're shrinking a good bit from their testing center because they don't really have a ton going on here for the rest of the year, for the most part. So, yeah, this is not too huge of a surprise, though. There are definitely people that thought Nintendo would kind of get out of all this without any sort of playoffs, and that definitely was kind of a not a great assumption to make. But yeah, because of the way that Nintendo works here, it seems like the word is that it's potentially over 100 contractors being affected. Maybe a bunch of those being converted to full-time status, but could still be like half of that losing their jobs. But like I saw, maybe 120 total affected. So probably at least a few dozen losing their jobs, if not more. We'll have to see if there's any full details. But yeah, kind of Nintendo's in a weird holding position now as they wait for whatever perfect conditions will get everything going for their next platform.
Yeah, definitely another, you know, weird, obviously, like, you don't want to see this kind of thing happen at any time at all. But, you know, considering that we're supposedly hot off the heels on, you know, a new platform, it's just awkward. Like, you need as many testers as possible. And, you know, even talking about the games in general, like, you know, Princess Peach being one of them, you know, I talked about how buggy it was. And, you know, I don't know how much the contractors have anything to do with this, but not that it's just going to be less of them. It's just weird to see. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, I know that they were contractors and, you know, that pretty much gives Nintendo all the rights here. But at the same time, it's, you wonder why they actually did it. Like, I'm pretty sure they're going to report nothing but profits during the next quarter. So pretty late.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. But for some really good news here, Game Informer magazine has announced that they are offering a standalone subscription for the first time in their history. Because if you did not know, they started as, I forget if they mentioned it here, like they started as a like newsletter kind of thing that you would get at, I forget if it's Funkoland or EB Games, one of those two.
Yeah.
And sort of grew up into a magazine probably a handful of years later. And has been, you know, a full magazine ever since. Probably the only big gaming magazine here in the U.S.
that at least still exists. Yeah.
I think there's like a smaller like Nintendo magazine of sorts that runs, but I think it's through like a Patreon kind of thing. But yeah, Game Informer kind of allowing you to subscribe to the physical magazine, because I think the rewards program at GameStop only gets you a digital version. So this can get you a physical and digital edition for 1 year's worth for 1991, from the year of their founding. You can get 2 years for $35 if you want. So that'll get you 10 issues a year, which from what I've read is basically because they put out issues every 5 weeks instead of every month. So and I'm assuming that's a pandemic thing, as I think the issues from before that were all monthly, and then the pandemic made it like, oh, we need more time to do this.
Yep.
So yeah, they've shifted that a little bit, but still get a lot of cool features and writing in there. And if you want to support a magazine directly and show GameStop the value of this this publication, this is a good way to do it. So yeah, definitely recommend it. I got 2 years in, so should be getting an issue here in the next few weeks for that. So yeah, definitely recommend that. Support your media that you like.
Yeah, seriously. I went ahead the day they announced that. I was like, yep, I'll do that. So I now have a actual yearly subscription for them now. So
yeah.
Yeah. I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but I did see that it was a really good price. So yeah, I'm definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely a good way to support them, because they still have a lot of good talent, even though they've lost a few people. But yeah, a lot of good stuff there. And yeah, that's one of the places I get some of our news from their website, because they do a lot of good news stuff. So I think that's going to do it for the news for this week. And as I said earlier, we're going to have a spring release preview for the next 3 months, April through June, though June's a bit rougher here just because not many people have announced June games. But we'll start here with April and kind of go through this pretty quickly. For April 4th, we got Freedom Planet 2.
Yep.
That is the sequel to the original game. That's just kind of a fan game of Sonic the Hedgehog.
It started out as a fan game before it sort of became its own thing. But yeah, it's actually really good. It is legitimately amazing. And so, yeah, I am going to play this the moment it is available. Because I absolutely adored the original Freedom Planet. It doesn't have the kind of, you know, sort of by the numbers story that a Sonic the Hedgehog game has. It's a lot more involved than that, and actually has characters that have, you know, personality and stuff like that. So,
yeah. So that'll be on PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. Like that one's been on PC for a bit, but this is the console release. So yeah. Also on April 4th, Turbo Golf Racing for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. That is the Rocket League style golf game where you're playing as one of 8 cars that get match made into a round where you play 3 holes and try to get your ball into the hole as fast as possible before the others, and you're getting in sort of like classic kind of tournament style. You get, you know, points. It's like 10 points for the top person, you know, all the way down to like 2 or 3, and you're trying to get at the top scores and win the whole match. So lots of cosmetics to unlock and all that. So looking forward to that for this week. So there you go for that. Also this week, April 5th, Biomorph for the PC. This is a Metroid-like featuring an alien creature that is landed on this planet and has the ability or gets the ability to kind of take over these creatures' forms, essentially biomorph into them to solve puzzles or get around obstacles, whatever they need to do. I played the demo for this, so you can check the video for that on our YouTube, see what that game's all about. It seems like it's got a really cool look to it. It's kind of a I think they described it as a mix of like Hollow Knight, Metroid, Animal Crossing, and like a couple other games there. So they're doing some other stuff to it to add some more things to do than just explore and, you know, kill creatures and all that. So there's that. Let's see, for next week, April 9th, Botany Manor. This is a narrative adventure game. Puzzle thing too, as well as you're exploring this manor that has a bunch of puzzles around getting these plants to grow, I guess. I played the demo for this I think last year. This is gonna be on Game Pass on Xbox and PC, but also be out on Switch. And that one's a very fun little game, so that one's worth checking out. April 10th, there's Broken Roads for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. That's one of those computer RPG style games, but set in a Mad Max style setting to get all that kind of weird stuff to it. So there's that. Let's see, April 16th, there's Grounded for PlayStation and Switch. So you can check that out. Also on the 16th is Harold Halibut for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. It's also on Game Pass. That is one of those adventure games. But with a lot of work put into it to do have like a stop motion style of animation to it. For these like claymation characters, so it's gonna be a huge game, because I downloaded the demo on Steam and it's like 50 gigs for a demo, so I assume that game is gonna be huge wherever you're getting it. So there's that. And then on April 18th, Final Fantasy 16 The Rising Tide DLC is out for the PS5. The last of the DLC they've announced for that game, as they're, I think they're working on a PC version of that game. mm-hmm. come out here in probably the next couple of months. So there's that. Let's see, the week after that, April 23rd has two big games. Ayuden Chronicle, 100 Heroes for mm-hmm. everything. That's also on Game Pass. That's the successor to the Suikoden series from the same creator, who unfortunately mm-hmm. has passed away a few months ago before the game was finished. But, you know, done all the great work there
mm-hmm.
for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Also on April 23rd, Tales of Kinzera Zao. This is mm-hmm. on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC. This is a Metroid-like. But maybe in the vein of a Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown,
mm-hmm.
Though it's a $20 game, so it's much cheaper to jump into. This is EA original from the from a fairly well-known actor that's worked on this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble trying to get figure out the guy's name. Let me see here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his let me see. Quick, the news here. Yeah, from what's his name here? Wait, where's his name at? Yeah, Abu. Geez, I don't even list his whole name. He's an actor in a bunch of stuff. He's also voiced Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins.
Mm-hmm.
But he made this game as sort of a based on some of his family's heritage.
Mm-hmm.
In Africa, but also as like a way for him to deal with his grief from losing his father in 2013 to cancer, and sort of, you know, a son dealing with the grief of losing his father
mm-hmm.
At such a young age. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff with this game. So looking forward to that one. Let's see, April 25th, a couple days later, there's four games coming out this day.
Mm-hmm.
Another Crab's Treasure. For PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That is the Souls-like, but featuring a hermit crab.
Yep.
Who's, you know, killing a bunch of creatures and swapping shells as like your shield of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. I played the demo for that. That's pretty cool. There's Megaton Musashi Wired. This is a level 5 game. It's a mech action RPG game.
Mm-hmm.
It also has an anime based on it that's supposed to be coming out here sometime later this year.
Mm-hmm.
So is that that's PlayStation, Switch, and PC. Saga Emerald Beyond is also out April 25th for PlayStation, Switch, PC, and mobile. So the new game from that franchise, the first mainline one that has some money put into it. Looks mm-hmm. pretty good, what they've shown. And then the other game on the 25th is Whisker Waters for PS5, Switch, and PC. This is a this is like a life sim fishing RPG kind of game. So you got like a cute little cat character that you're controlling mm-hmm. going around this fishing village, doing stuff, catching fish, you know, helping people out, doing all that kind of stuff. So there's that. And yeah, still more coming out this same week here.
Yeah.
There's Sandland on the 26th mm-hmm. for PlayStation, Xbox Series X and S and PC.
Mm-hmm.
And also Stellar Blade for the PS5.
Mm-hmm.
That's also on the 26th. So that's a big week there with like 8 games
mm-hmm.
of note. Then they end off the April with Braid Anniversary Edition on the 30th
mm-hmm.
For everything. And then also on the 30th is Sea of Thieves coming to the PS5.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, big month for April here. This is just all the stuff I pulled that would have some interest to us here. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Brandon, anything in here that you're interested in?
Well, obviously the I'm for Freedom Planet 2. That's an obvious one, like right off the bat. Also Stellar Blade. I'm definitely interested in. I don't know about Braid. I've played that game a zillion times already. We'll see.
And Jonathan Blow just sucks.
Yeah, he's just kind of a prick. Asshole. Yeah. But yeah, that's more or less what I'm looking forward to.
All right. How about you, Dan Reb?
Yeah, it's not a whole lot for me either, but there are definitely some highlights, them being the Final Fantasy 16 DLC. I'm looking forward to that. Iron and Chronicle 100 Heroes. That's a game that I'm hounding their studio for every day for a code, so hopefully that happens soon. I am looking forward to Tales of Kinzer ZAU, Zaur, maybe how it's pronounced. That's definitely something I've been looking forward to for a long time. I just didn't talk about it because I worked at EA, but now I know. So looking forward to that. And then Sandland. Sandland is definitely a game that I'm looking forward to. Although I haven't seen the anime or watched the... I haven't watched the anime or any of that yet, so I definitely want to get the material first. And then Stellar Blade has my interest, but I just downloaded the demo, and I hope to play that tonight to gain more of an opinion on it. But yeah, like, April is definitely, like, chock full, but, like, to me, like, over these past 3 months, it's a break, unless Ayudin Chronicle ends up being 100 hours. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sandland has a demo out now that I believe is just open world stuff. There's no, like, quests or anything to do in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played a Sandland demo at Comic-Con last year, which... I'm assuming was the same thing. I'm not sure, so I'll check it out.
Yeah. So there's that. The anime is pretty cool. I watched it on Hulu. The first 7 episodes are out. I think they've added at least one more since then. Very fun. So definitely recommend that for people that are looking forward to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. May's got a bunch of stuff as well. Let's see. For May 2nd, there's Endless Ocean Luminous for the Switch. The first of 2 Switch games from Nintendo here, coming out in the next couple of months here. So that's their first entry in that series in quite a while since I think the Wii. So yeah, that's kind of just a, an ocean exploration sim kind of thing. But this one I believe has more multiplayer stuff to it. You can kind of go diving with up to 30 people. To tag fish and all that. I don't know. Kind of weird thing, but might be a nice chill game to play. May 7th, Prison Architect 2 for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. This looks like it's turning out pretty well. It's basically like the original game. But I think the world and the characters are all in 3D now. Still kind of their simple... South Park-ish kind of art style to it. But yeah, they're adding more 3D kind of ability to build up these prisons, so you get that kind of fun stuff to it. May 8th is when V-Rising is hitting 1.0 on PC. That'll be coming to PS5 later this year, so that'll be interesting to see. And they just announced some Castlevania crossover stuff.
Yeah,
I think you'll kill a Belmont.
So
there's an interesting twist. May 9th is Animal Well. A big indie game that is coming out that a lot of people are interested in. It's made by one developer.
Yep.
That looks pretty cool. That's PS5, Switch, and PC. It's like a weird little exploration puzzle game.
Yeah.
So one of those kind of games. May 9th, Pro County comes out for PS. Yeah, for PlayStation and PC, that is a Resident Evil, classic Resident Evil style survival shooter.
Yep.
With maybe more Final Fantasy VII style character models of like stumpy looking PS1 character models.
Yeah, they, you know, it honestly, it's kind of neat that they embrace that visual.
Yeah. There's a whole community of horror developers that are just interested in making games in the PS1 art style.
Yeah, Signalis is a really good example. That game was amazing. So,
yeah, so there's a lot of stuff like that. Yeah, the middle of the month is a little barren from what I could find, but I assume that'll fill up here as we go. May 21st is the next here with Senua's Saga's Hellblade 2 for Xbox Series X and S and PC. That is the first Xbox game of the year. As they finally get a game out. Then also on May 21st, System Shock is coming to PlayStation and Xbox. The remake of the original game becoming available for the consoles. That's supposed to be pretty good. So there's that. And then, May 23rd has 4 games here. another busy day. There's Haunty for everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That is a neat little spooky platforming adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing that looks really cool. There's also Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
So that finally comes out. We'll find out more about what sort of upgrades that has over the original game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only trailers I've seen of late have been just story trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Then also on May 23rd, Until Then for PS5 and PC, that's like a little indie narrative adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
That looks pretty neat. And then, yeah, also on May 23rd, World of Goo 2 comes out on Switch and PC.
Mm.
Finally getting a sequel to that game 15 years later from a lot of the same people that made the original game. And they're looking to do more of that and some weird stuff on top of that. Mm. So that looks pretty cool. Then we end the month on May 28th with Multiverses on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. That game's returning from the end of its beta with some more characters and stages and DLC, you know, content and all that stuff. So we'll see if that's a better game.
Mm.
Let's see, May 30th, there's Umbra Claw for PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That is from the director of Master Blaster Zero, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
That director's come back to make a new game here. And it's basically, I believe, you play as a cat in like a Metroid-like kind of game. But when you get killed, you sort of come back to life I forget if there's any like roguelite elements or whatever. I was looking at this, it looks really neat. But it's like a cat that gets sent to the World of Souls. So it's got a really interesting art style to it. Almost maybe like an Ultras, but a little bit different. But that looks pretty neat. And then, yeah, May 31st ends with F124 for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC as they get the new game out there for this season. So, yeah, May's got some pretty good stuff here. So, Brandon, what are you looking forward to?
So, Crow County actually looks really neat. Senua Saga is actually something I am looking forward to because, God, that first game is amazing. System Shock, not sure yet about it, but I definitely want to I want to see how that turns out. Cause there, that is a name that has a serious pedigree to it. And also Umbra Claw actually looks kind of neat. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. How about you, Dan Rip?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. My shining jewel here is Hellblade 2. You know, like that was the first exclusive next-gen game we knew about from the beginning, and we're finally getting it. So, you know, hopefully we do get it, and I'm looking forward to that. Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is a game that I've only played once, but I have played it, and I don't own it, and I look forward to finally owning it. I do want to give a special shout-out to Until Then. That's a game that I saw at GDC, but I didn't get a chance to play. But the reason why this one hits home to me is it's based in the Philippines. You know, there aren't a whole lot of Philippine developers, and it's good that, you know, we finally have one that's really sort of have a mainstream publisher behind it. So I'm looking forward to that. And then there's World of Goo 2, which was, you know, it's the sequel to probably the very first indie game I ever played on a WiiWare. So I'm looking forward to that puzzle game. That's about it.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, and June here is a bit lighter just because it's the furthest out. We haven't had too many announcements for that month. Mm. But there are definitely some big stuff here. June 14th is the first one that we get big games on. They're releasing Monster Hunter Stories and Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
At least on PlayStation. Stories is releasing on PS4, Switch, and PC as sort of the remake of the original 3DS game that now gets to be played by more people.
Mm-hmm.
Then Monster Hunter Stories 2, which just came out on Switch and PC, is coming to PlayStation 4 on that same day. There'll be bundles. You can get both games for a bit cheaper if you want. Those are games where they took the world of Monster Hunter and kind of made a Pokemon-esque kind of game out of it, which makes for, from what I've seen, some pretty fun stuff. But June 14th is also when Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance comes out on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC week to release alongside those games. I assume get out of the way of the game that comes out on the 21st. So there's that you can check out. The first Shin Megami Tensei game to release on non-Nintendo platforms in a while. Outside of like remasters of the Nocturne. So is that. And then on June 18th, Still Wakes the Deep. The new game from Bloober, not Bloober Team, Chinese Room, takes place on like a big oil rig where a bunch of spooky shit happens. And you're one of the people on that rig that is trying to survive and deal with whatever weird stuff's going on there. So yeah, that's PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. And yeah, June 21st is probably the biggest thing of the month. Elden Ring's first and only DLC, Shadow of the Erdtree, is finally out for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. I believe that's a $40 game, or $40 DLC. But they have a pretty good deal where you can get that and the game for $60 if you have not bought that yet. So that's a pretty good deal there. And then June 25th is when Super Monkey Ball Banana Rumble comes out for the Switch. It's more Monkey Ball weirdness, but it has online multiplayer for the first time, I believe. So is that. And then Nintendo has the last game on this on the list here on June 27th, Luigi's Mansion 2 HD for the Switch. So people can finally check out that game and see that it's kind of a weird game because they split up the mansions into a bunch of smaller ones as you're kind of going around to different you know, haunted sort of houses, essentially, to capture ghosts, I guess. I forget what all's in there. I haven't played that game in quite a while, and just remember it being fine compared to the original. So, yeah, I don't know if that one's going to be a big deal, because I don't think they're going to change all that much about it, other than just make it easier to play in HD now. So, there you go. Brandon, anything here you're sticking out for you?
Shadow of the Erdtree, 100%. I want to play more Elden Ring. And, yeah, that's about it.
All right, how about you, Danrib?
Yeah, I mean, not really much of it, much of anything. I've already played both of those Monster Hunter Story games, and then Shin Megami Tensei V is a game that I might have interest in, so left the original Switch version on the shelf unopened. So I'm also not interested in Elden Ring. I don't know what Still Wakes the Deep is. I'll have to look it up. And Monkey Ball hasn't been good since the GameCube. And then Luigi's Mansion 2, like, that's the bad one. So, yeah, not a whole lot here.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's some good stuff coming out here over the next few months. We'll probably have some more stuff getting announced here as we get up to Summer Game Fest, where a bunch of the publishers will have showcases to announce what they're releasing for the rest of the year after this. And yeah, we do have that indie showcase next week that'll have at least some indie games probably coming out here in the near future. So looking forward to that. But yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week. So yeah, thank you to Dan Urban and Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and more stuff to talk about as it turns into April. And we finally reach April. As it seems like March has gone on forever. But yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are looking forward to weather being normal again. Because here, we're just hopping back and forth from like the 30s to the 50s.
Yep.
And getting rain and snow, and we don't have this thing called spring yet.
Yeah.
We're just in winter.
Whereas for us, it's been just also all over the place, but it's in the... You know, it got up to around 80 today, so.
Yeah. Today was pretty warm, but we're also looking to get snow later this week, so that's where we're at. So, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.